Greetings to the brightest audience in the country, and welcome to Theology Thursday. I'm Nicole McBurney. Every weekday, we bring you the news of the day, the culture, and science from a Christian worldview, but today, join me and Pastor Bob Enyar as we explore the source of our Christian worldview, the Bible.
Don't throw me into the briar patch. And really, he wants to be thrown because that's where he lived, the briar rabbit. But the tree said to the bramble, the prickly thorns, the mess, exactly where you don't want to go, you come and reign over us. And the bramble said to the trees, if in truth you anoint me as king over you, then come and take shelter in my shade. But if not, let fire come out of the bramble and devour the cedars of Lebanon. So as soon as they come to somebody who is exactly the wrong leader, that leader, not only will I accept your offer, but if you withdraw it, I will destroy you. So they say, okay, we got to make him the king. And that's a good description, I think, of America's electoral system. You know, it's quite often the best liars who end up with their ambition propelling themselves to the front of the pack. The best liars. And how do you avoid that? I don't know. I wouldn't have an answer. When you have millions of people voting, they're going to vote on very limited information, sound bites, what sounds good, and you could make great wickedness sound good. That's what's done. So verse 16, so that's the parable that Jotham yelled down to the men of Shechem, trying to say, hey, the guy you got is thorns and thistles. And you got him because if you didn't, he would have killed you too. Verse 16, now therefore, if you have acted in truth and sincerity in making Abimelech king, and if you have dealt well with Jerubbaal and his house and have done to him as he deserves, for my father fought for you, risked his life, and delivered you out of the hand of Midian. So he's saying, okay, if you've done this honorably, then fine. But you treated my father's house well? Come on, he risked his life to deliver you from the Midianites and the Amalekites. And look how you have repaid him. Verse 18, but you have risen up against my father's house this day and killed his 70 sons. And notice there, that's a figure of speech, because Jotham was one who was not killed. So it's at least only, it's 69. And that's if we don't count Abimelech, and he was the son of a concubine, as we find out. You have risen up against my father's house this day and killed his 70 sons on one stone and made Abimelech, the son of his female servant, king over the men of Shechem, because he is your brother. So Abimelech wasn't even the son of Gideon's wife. It was the son of a concubine. And so this is the time to throw that as a little insult against the men of Shechem. Verse 19, if then you have acted in truth and sincerity with Jerubbaal and with his house this day, then rejoice in Abimelech and let him also rejoice in you. And I love that kind of sarcasm. I just think that's the greatest. With pro-aborts, that'll be downtown at the Capitol, and we will carry big pictures of aborted children, and we walk up behind them, and we'll say, know your pro-choice rights, know your pro-choice rights. And they turn around and they clap. They say, yeah, and they turn around and they look, and they see the picture, and they can't connect it. Their brain, they can't think fast enough. And then some of them will say, well, we agree with you, but can't you get a better picture? They're just so stupid. You know, when you commit yourself to wickedness, nothing makes sense. And so, dripping sarcasm. Oh, this is, so some people will say, we'll be at a protest with these pictures of aborted children, and some pro-abort will say, that's not true, that's a lie. That picture, that's a lie. So I'll say, you're right. It is a lie. This child was killed by a drunk driver. This is all a lie. You could go home and sleep well tonight because this doesn't happen in America. This is a lie. So just tell them what they want to hear. The book of Revelation says, if you're a liar, be a liar. You're a thief, be a thief. You're evil, be evil, because it will be exposed. So don't deceive yourself. And we did a bit of that today with angry people at Gary Megason's house, the senior vice president of the Weitz Corporation. The people are angry. A pregnant woman came out and her boyfriend or husband, couldn't tell, and they were so mad at the pictures on the truth truck. And they said in big letters, courtesy of the Weitz Company.com. They were so angry. So I used Will Duffy's approach. I said, why don't you like the picture? Why are you angry? What's wrong with the picture? And they were just furious. I said, why don't you like the picture? Tell me, what's wrong with the picture? They couldn't say. And they were talking for 5 minutes. And the one guy, he was, you know, in my face. He was mad. And I said, look, you're afraid to tell me why you don't like the picture. So how can we have a conversation if you won't even admit the truth? And he wouldn't. So this is what we're up against, of course. Jotham is saying, hey, if you did this in truth and sincerity, then rejoice in Abimelech and let him also rejoice in you. But in reality, I know that you all hate one another. You simply hate one another, and now you're stuck with each other. It's like Bill Clinton and the Democratic Party. What, they love him? He's the first black president. So in South Carolina, the primary this week, the blacks voted overwhelmingly against Hillary, and they said it was because of Bill Clinton, because he's a jerk. What, there's this great love between them? No, there's not, because he didn't love poor blacks in America. He used them. He used them. And he didn't care how they were hurt as long as he got their votes and their money. And so what, there's this great love, and then you're in a little primary in a minor state, and they hate each other all of a sudden? So that's what is the wisdom and insight that Jotham has. You guys, you're made for one another. If this is all done in sincerity and truth, you're made for one another. Enjoy yourselves. Verse 20. But if not, let fire come from where? From God? No. Let fire come from me, Jotham? No. He says, let fire come from Abimelech and devour the men of Shechem and Beth Milo, which is obviously a related suburb. And let fire come from the men of Shechem and from Beth Milo and devour Abimelech. And Jotham ran away and fled, and he went to Beer and dwelt there for fear of Abimelech, his brother. So he made this prediction. You don't need me to intervene. You guys will hate one another and you'll destroy each other. So look at the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union deprived people of liberty, freedom, free speech, freedom of religion. They couldn't travel. They couldn't work as they chose. They couldn't make the products they wanted to make. They couldn't sell them how they wanted to sell them. And so what? Everyone in the Soviet Union loved each other and they just all pulled hard for the common good? No, they just all hated each other. And the joke there was they had 100% unemployment. No, they had 100% employment, and the people pretended to work, and the government pretended to pay them. And it was misery. It was equality, not of equality of rights, but equality of misery. They spread the misery around equally. And so that's what happens when you follow a lie. Verse 22, after Abimelech had reigned over Israel 3 years, God sent a spirit of ill will between Abimelech and the men of Shechem, and the men of Shechem dealt treacherously with Abimelech. So now, was this supernatural? It sounds supernatural in the text. I will grant you, if I'm discussing this with someone who disagrees with our theology or even my interpretation here, I will grant to them that, yes, this sounds supernatural. I don't believe it is, because Scripture is filled with figures of speech, and it rains on the just and the unjust alike. That doesn't mean that God flew over the clouds and seated them so it would rain right then and there. It just rains on the just and the unjust. And when you hate God, it's really hard to love your neighbor. And when you are founded on the bloodshed within a family of one brother slaughtering all his flesh and blood, then there is corruption within your ranks. And so you will hate one another. And so I believe, and when we get to heaven, if God wants to, he could give us more details about all these stories, and we'll meet some of the people involved. It'd be neat to meet Jotham and Abimelech. He will be, on Judgment Day, he'll be standing before the great white throne, so we will see his judgment taking place. So we'll learn more about what happened. But I believe this was simply the normal order of affairs between murderers and betrayers. You know, the Nazis hated the Stalinists, and so on. It's just the whole story of the human race. So God created men to live at peace and righteousness and innocence. But when we rebelled against him, then all these consequences came in. It all came down on Adam and Eve's heads. And so their sons turned against each other, or one son turned against the other. God didn't have to turn Cain against Abel. It was just the natural consequence of now growing up with the flesh in rebellion against God. So the men of Shechem dealt treacherously also with Abimelech, and vice versa. Verse 24, that the crime done to the 70 sons of Jerubbaal might be settled and their blood be laid on Abimelech, their brother, who killed them, and on the men of Shechem who aided him in the killing of his brothers. And the men of Shechem set men in ambush against him, against Abimelech, on the tops of the mountains. And they robbed all who passed by them along the way, and it was told Abimelech. Now Gaal, the son of Ebed, came with his brothers and went over to Shechem, and the men of Shechem put their confidence in him. So here's a new character on the scene, and the men of Shechem, they don't like Abimelech anymore. So they say to this guy, Gaal or Gaal, Gaal, they said, hey, we don't like this Abimelech character. We like you. Okay. Verse 27. So they went out into the fields and gathered grapes from their vineyards and trod them and made merry. So they made wine. And they went into the house of their God. Notice they went into an idol's temple. And ate and drank and cursed Abimelech. Sounds like a great religious ceremony. I could just picture them dancing in drunkenness and cursing this guy that they had entered into a bloody covenant with. Verse 28, then Gaal, the son of Ebed, said, who is Abimelech? And who is Shechem, that we should serve him? Is he not the son of Jerubbaal? And is not Zebul his officer? Remember the worthless men he bought with the 70 shekels of silver? Serve the men of Hamor, the father of Shechem, but why should we serve him? If only this people were under my authority, then I would remove Abimelech. So he said to Abimelech, increase your army and come out. So this guy has guts, right? He doesn't say, I'm going to get you while you're weak. He says, build up your army. Get as many people as you can get, and then let's go at it. Verse 30, when Zebul, the ruler of the city, heard the words of Gaal, the son of Ebed, his anger was aroused. And he sent messengers to Abimelech secretly, saying, take note, Gaal, the son of Ebed, and his brothers have come to Shechem, and here they are fortifying the city against you. So, similar to what happened a generation earlier with Gideon against this massive horde of Midianites, where they all destroyed themselves, and Gideon, for the most part, watched in amazement. That's what's about to happen again, where these wicked people will destroy themselves as Jotham is vindicated. Verse 32. Now therefore, get up by night, you and the people who are with you, and lie in wait in the field. And it shall be, as soon as the sun is up in the morning, that you shall rise early and rush upon the city. And when he and the people who are with him come out against you, you may then do to them as you find opportunity. So Abimelech and all the people who were with him rose by night and lay in wait against Shechem in four companies. When Gaal, the son of Ebed, went out and stood in the entrance to the city gate, Abimelech and the people who were with him rose from lying in wait. And when Gaal saw the people, he said to Zebul, "Look, people are coming down from the tops of the mountains." And Zebul said, "You see the shadows of the mountains as if they were men." He's trying to keep the guy off guard. There are people coming down from the mountains. But he's saying, "No, your eyes are playing tricks on you." Verse 37, so Gaal spoke again and said, "See, people are coming down from the center of the land. And another company is coming from the diviner's terebinth tree." Then Zebul said to him, "Where indeed is your mouth now with which you said, 'Who is Abimelech, that we should serve him?' Are not these the people whom you despised? Go out, if you will, and fight with them now." So Gaal went out, leading the men of Shechem, and fought with Abimelech. And Abimelech chased him, and he fled from him, and many fell wounded to the very entrance of the gate. Then Abimelech dwelt at Arumah, and Zebul drove out Gaal and his brothers, so that they would not dwell in Shechem. And it came about on the next day that the people went out into the field, and they told Abimelech. So he took his people, divided them into three companies, and lay in wait in the field. And he looked, and there were the people coming out of the city, and he rose against them and attacked them. Then Abimelech and the company that was with him rushed forward and stood at the entrance of the gate of the city, and the two other companies rushed upon all who were in the fields and killed them. So Abimelech fought against the city all that day. He took the city and killed the people who were in it, and he demolished the city and sowed it with salt to destroy its ability to be fruitful. Now when all the men of the tower of Shechem had heard that, they entered the stronghold of the temple of the god Bereth. And one moment again on this god Bereth. Remember that the primary god back then was Baal, and we hear about Beelzebub, and that was the name of either a pagan god or the devil, depending on who is talking, back in the time of the Lord. Well, Baal was the primary god of the Canaanites, Baal. He was the god of fertility and harvest. And there are all these Balaam variants, depending on who was worshiping him. If they were the Moabites, they worship Baal Peor, P-E-O-R. If they were Canaanites, they worship Baal Berith, B-E-R-I-T-H. The Philistines, they worshiped Baal Zebub, where later it became Beelzebub. And then the Assyrians and the Babylonians, they worshiped Bel, B-E-L. So these were all the similar name linguistically, and the pagan cultures, the gods evolved, and they traded gods, and so that's basically the Baal characters. Verse 47, and it was told Abimelech that all the men of the tower of Shechem were gathered together. So, yeah, they're in the stronghold of the temple of their god, Baal Berith. And Abimelech is told, hey, they're all there in that one temple. This is a great opportunity. Then Abimelech went up to Mount Zalmon, he and all the people who were with him, probably his general, Zebul, that worthless guy. And Abimelech took an axe in his hand and cut down a bough from the trees and took it and laid it on his shoulder. Then he said to the people who were with him, what you have seen me do, make haste and do as I have done. So each of the people likewise cut down his own bough and followed Abimelech, put them against the stronghold, and set the stronghold on fire above them, so that all the people of the Tower of Shechem died, about 1,000 men and women. Now that's devastating. What a way to die. And what retribution against the city that was so evil to look for a king who was more wicked than they were. And so he slaughtered his brothers, killed 70 brothers, and so he killed the people who made him king. Of course, isn't it predictable? About 1,000 men and women. Oh, and by the way, they didn't all have to die of fire. They would have died from the smoke going up the tower. They're in the tower. The smoke comes up. You inhale that hot, burning ash, and your lungs get seared, and you suffocate within a minute. 1,000 people could be dead. Then Abimelech went to Thebes, and he encamped against Thebes and took it. But there was a strong tower in the city, and all the men and women, all the people of that city, fled there and shut themselves in, and they went up to the top of the tower. There was no internet back then, no Drudge Report. They didn't know that the casino on the Las Vegas Strip was on fire. They didn't know what to do, so they did the same thing as the last people. They went up in the tower. And Abimelech, he's thinking, I know how to handle this. Verse 52, so Abimelech came as far as the tower and fought against it. And he drew near the door of the tower to burn it with fire. But a certain woman dropped an upper millstone on Abimelech's head and crushed his skull. Whoa. Then he called quickly to the young man, his armor bearer. So he had an injury that he believed would probably be fatal. He probably would die. But he wasn't yet dead. And just like Saul, remember in this morning's sermon, we talked about suicide bombers and how wicked suicide is and how destructive and destabilizing it is. And you had the kamikazes from Japan, and today you have the jihadist suicide bombers. And when liberals say suicide is a valid way to end your life, then millions of people think in terms of suicide as being viable, and they try to work it into their life plan. Well, when it comes time to die, maybe I'll kill myself. So when people think like that, you got a 21-year-old girl and her boyfriend leaves her, marries her best friend, she commits suicide. So suicide is a leading cause of death of young people in America. After Columbine, everybody knew about Columbine, but then the students who commit suicide, nobody, that doesn't even make the news. And then you have an epidemic of murder-suicide, because we always had criminals, but when suicide is considered to be beyond the pale, completely unacceptable, embarrassing, humiliating, even creeps don't want to be humiliated. So they don't think in terms of suicide. And they want to murder their wife and kids, but they'll get caught, so they don't do it. But then the culture advertises 1,000 ways over, you can kill yourself. So most murderers are very bad problem solvers. That's why they become murderers. And so now the culture says to them, hey, you can get away with it. You can do whatever you want and escape. And so they do. And so we have an epidemic of murder-suicide where Harrison Klebold and 1,000 others like them, they think they commit a murder and they escape. Except when they're escaping, they run right into the hands of the judge. They run into the hands of God. And the New Testament says, it is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. So they think they're escaping judgment. They're running right to it headlong. Like Judas committed suicide, fell headlong, and ended up in hell. He didn't escape anything. What? Everyone then will be there at judgment day. He didn't escape. There is no escape. We have to be mature adults and face reality. Okay, this is what I've done. Here are the consequences. When it's wrong, God, I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Help me to deal with this. So he believed he had a fatal wound. Verse 54, then he called quickly to the young man, his armor bearer, and said to him, draw your sword and kill me, lest men say of me, a woman killed him. You chicken, you fool. So his young man thrust him through and he died. Great. And that's pretty much how Saul died also. And remember when Judas died, Judas was one of the 12. This is just a side note. When he died, there were no longer 12 apostles because he lost his estate, let another take his office. So then they had cast lots and they chose Matthias. So now they had 12 again. The book of Acts said now they had 12. Then Peter was killed by King Herod. No, I said the wrong thing. Then James was killed by King Herod, John's brother, James and John. James was murdered in Acts chapter 12, but they didn't have to replace James. Why not? Because he's still one of the 12. He didn't lose his office. So there are 12 apostles to this day. They rule over the 12 tribes of Israel. We have one body of Christ with one baptism, and we have no apostles ruling over us. Christ is the head of the body of Christ. He is the head. We are the body. Whereas Israel is a political organization, they have 12 tribes and therefore 12 judges called the 12 apostles. And their names are inscribed on the 12 walls of the New Jerusalem that we read about in the book of Revelation. That book says that the 12 walls of the city have the names of the 12 apostles written on them. Verse 55, and when the men of Israel saw that Abimelech was dead, they departed, every man to his place. Thus God repaid the wickedness of Abimelech, which he had done to his father by killing his 70 brothers. And all the evil of the men of Shechem, God returned on their own heads. It's cause and effect. You reap what you sow. If somebody seems to get away with something, that's only temporary. Nobody gets away with anything. Either you accept Christ's punishment on the cross for your sin, or you pay. That's the two possibilities. And if you accept Christ's punishment, nobody got away with anything because he paid for it. He paid dearly. So God repaid the wickedness of Abimelech, which he had done to his father by killing his 70 brothers. And all the evil of the men of Shechem, God returned on their own heads, and on them came the curse of Jotham, the son of Jeroboam. May God bless you.